A production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting, a vital resource for South Dakota's future.
I'm going to call this meeting of the Senate Appropriations Committee to order. Secretary, would you call the roll?
Sutton? Here. Peters?
Aye.
Nordstrom?
Aye.
Nordstrom's not here. Heineman?
Here.
Haverly?
Here.
Junkie?
Here.
Putnam?
Here.
Tiedemann?
Here.
Brown?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Good. Looks like we have a couple of new pages. If you guys would come up to the microphone here and introduce yourself and where you're from and what you hope to do after high school.
I'm Walker Iverson. I'm from Murdo, and I'm going to go study at USD for theater.
I'm Jordan Rohrbach, and I'm from Aberdeen, South Dakota. And I'm planning on going into elementary education with counseling minor, and I'm just not sure what college yet.
Okay. All right. Senator Heineman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could I ask for approval of the February 8th minutes?
You could. Is there any discussion? All in favor of approval of the February 8th minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, those are approved. Senator Peters.
I would move February 13th.
Second.
The minutes for February 13th have been moved by Senator Peters, seconded by Senator Junkie. Is there any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Those are approved. Senator Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move February 2nd.
Senator Putnam has moved the minutes for February 2nd, seconded by Senator Haverly. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senator Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You gave me a funny look there. I'm not sure how to take that. I'd like to move the minutes for February 10th.
Senator Sutton has moved the minutes for February 10th, seconded by Senator Junkie. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senator Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. February 21st, and can I do February 22nd simultaneously, minutes?
Senator Junkie has moved the minutes for February 21st and 22nd, seconded by Senator Putnam. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. We caught up. All right. As a reminder to the folks in the audience today, please check your cell phones. Make sure they're either on off or vibrate. Although we are down to that time of the budget crunch, so any additional dollars would be appreciated by the committee. For those that are going to testify this morning, please make sure you sign in on the podium at the back of the room here. When you come up to the microphone, please introduce yourself and who you represent. There are going to be a few changes to the way the calendar or the agenda works this morning, so in the interest of letting any of you who may have an interest in these bills, let me walk through here and let you know what my intentions as the chair are. This morning we will start with House Bill 1242. We will take testimony, both proponent and opponent testimony on that. My intent is not to take action on that bill yet today, but we will go ahead and take the testimony that the public has. I plan on deferring House Bill 1136 until Monday. I will plan on deferring House Bill 1137 until Monday as well. We will take testimony and action, if time permits, on House Bill 1269 and 1270. I plan on deferring House Bill 1058, which is below the line, until Monday. And I plan on doing the same thing with House Bill 1078. That'll be deferred till Monday. So if you were here for any of those bills, that's the order in which we plan on proceeding this morning. With that, first up on the docket is House Bill 1242. This is an act to revise the General Appropriations Act for fiscal year 2012. I would take proponent testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, David Lust, House of Representatives, District 34 in Rapid City. 1242 is what I've considered a proposal for defense spending. Given that there's a possibility and prospect of another round of base closures in the BRAC process on the horizon, I thought it would be prudent to bring something forward that would allow us to hopefully avoid being on that list and take care of some much-needed things that the current Ellsworth Task Force and the Ellsworth Authority is handling. So that's the general proposal. I know there are some very knowledgeable folks behind me that would like to testify on the happenings regarding Ellsworth and what the efforts to strengthen that base. So I will give way to their testimony and stand by for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Lust. Are there other proponents for House Bill 1242?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Langeth. I'm the Executive Director of the Ellsworth Development Authority. I'm here along with members of the Ellsworth Task Force to express to you our hope that you would support this bill and this funding. With the uncertain economic times in the federal government and the proposals that are out on the table, cuts to our defense department are looming, and we just want to be in a position where we can take advantage of any opportunities or handle any challenges that those cuts may present to us regarding Ellsworth Air Force Base. The Ellsworth Development Authority shares the same goal as the Ellsworth Task Force, and that is to promote and protect the economic impact of Ellsworth Air Force Base. We have different responsibilities in reaching that goal, but that economic impact consists of over an annual economic impact based on the 2010 Department of Defense economic impact analysis of over $330 million to the state of South Dakota every year. It's over $900,000 a day that are contributed to our economy. Consists of 3,600 airmen that are stationed at Ellsworth, which equates to a population of over 9,000 with their dependents in the Rapid City, Box Elder area. In addition, there's another 1,100 civilian employees that are employed on the base. The Ellsworth Development Authority, our specific tasks in promoting and protecting the economic impact around Ellsworth are what we describe as outside the fence, and they're non-mission oriented. There are things such as projects that help Ellsworth Air Force Base lower their operating costs by doing joint projects like building a joint wastewater treatment plant with the city of Box Elder, which allows the operating costs on the base to be shared and reduced then, and those are the kinds of factors that are analyzed by the Department of Defense when they're analyzing their bases. In addition, we're also dealing with incompatible uses around the base, which primarily consists of properties, residential properties that are in areas where they shouldn't be, based on FAA studies with accident potential zones and noise contours. Anything we can do to alleviate, work towards solving and fixing these problems will have a positive impact when any decisions are being made regarding the future of Ellsworth. Thank you. I will turn the mic over to my cohort on the Ellsworth Task Force, Chris Lean.
Thank you, Scott. Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify. As Scott mentioned, I'm Chris Lean. I am the chairman of the Ellsworth Task Force, which is a community-based volunteer organization whose mission is designed to maintain and sustain the mission of Ellsworth Air Force Base for future generations in the defense of our nation. I'm here this morning to testify on behalf of 1242 and registered to do the same. As you're aware, the Secretary of Defense has advised Congress that the President is calling for rounds of base realignment and closure in 2013 and 2015. Considering the magnitude of the federal budget crisis, the impact of the announced 10% reduction of the next decade's defense budget and likelihood of a federal budget sequestration, reducing the defense budget by more than 20% in the next decade, we must maintain a state of readiness regarding the retention of Ellsworth Air Force Base. We need to continue our two decades old campaign to sustain Ellsworth's current mission and seek new missions to ensure that the base is maintained and improved for long-term operational capabilities. Integral to those objectives, we must maintain a coordinated program of information and initiatives with local, state, and government business leaders, our congressional delegation, defense officials, and industry representatives. In terms of the effectiveness of our successful reversal of the Secretary of Defense recommendation of the close, Ellsworth stands as proof that a posture of continuing readiness works. As my father always said, as one of the founding members of the task force, this is not a sprint, this is a marathon. Without reservation, our 2-decade-old program has proven to be a tremendous value as we've gone through the rounds of base closures in 1991, in 1993, in 1995, and 2005. From a strictly economic perspective, we can readily assess the impact of losing our area's largest singular employer and the greatest individual generator of annual spending in western South Dakota. Also, without reservation, the loss of population, institutional spending, personal incomes, and the tax revenues generated by Ellsworth economic impact would depress the Black Hills area economy for many years to come. As we have seen in the past in other communities, if a closed basis contributions can be replaced, they will recur over a very extended period of recovery. In the interim, those states and communities face the challenges of redeveloping a massive industrial facility and replacing thousands of valuable jobs. As such, the intense competition among military base support communities is now being exacerbated by a drastic defense reduction. Therefore, in closing, I would offer that prudent dollars spent to retain Ellsworth in defense of our nation brings our state a daily return, as Scott said, in excess of $900,000 a day. Now, and although it's very economically impactful, as we've been saying for the last 20 years, it also has to be maintained in the nation's defense. So it's a balance that we look at every day. While we realize that the state budget faces competing demands, please consider that a few, if any, expenditures can return such direct benefits in terms of economic impact and also the defense of our nation. I also have Pat McElgun, our executive director, here. He will not testify, but both of us will stand ready and available to answer any questions, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lehner. Are there any questions from the committee at this point? Okay. Are there any other proponents to 1242?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Cody Byram with the Governor's Office of Economic Development. We appreciate this opportunity to help further support the Ellsworth Development Authority and the Ellsworth Task Force their mission to help further protect and enhance Ellsworth Air Force Base. Governor Dugard has and continues to support this mission. He put together a working group internally, which consists of Commissioner Pat Costello, Chief of Staff Dusty Johnson, Jim Sawyer, Nathan Sanderson, and myself, to help work hand-in-hand with the Development Authority and also with the Task Force, and we've enjoyed a great working relationship with those two entities. So we understand that the fiscal picture still has some things to be worked out overall, but we are supportive of the idea of providing more resources to these two groups. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other proponents for House Bill 1242?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kitty Kinsman. I'm a registered lobbyist for the Rapid City Area Chamber of Commerce, and for the reasons already stated, we obviously are in support of this effort and have been proud of the work that the task force, in conjunction with many entities, state and federal, have done over the years to keep Ellsworth Air Force Base a vital part of our defense mission and our economy. Thanks.
Thank you. Are there other proponents for House Bill 1242? Proponents. Are there any opponents? Opponents. Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close the public testimony portion of the hearing on House Bill 1242. Senator Haberle.
Mr. Chair, I did have a question probably for Mr. McElgun. And as he's approaching the microphone, you should know that he was within the Ellsworth leadership at one time out at Ellsworth Air Force Base. He's a retired colonel, and we both served at Ellsworth, both retired from Ellsworth, but we were in two different worlds. And the question I have for you, Pat, is do you remember what the high population base was at Ellsworth Air Force Base prior to SAC going away?
Mr. Chairman, the highest population we saw in the early 90s at the peak of the Cold War was about 7,300 military personnel there. There were four wings, aircraft, bomb wing, missile wing, the training wing, and then this, the support wing. So it was significantly greater. And after that, we obviously downsized in the post-war period, shrank a little bit during the mid-90 period, and then came back up to our current strength.
Do you remember what the total, I know that was just airmen. Do you remember what the total, I want to say it was somewhere around 15,000. Does that?
When you put the families together and all the civilian employees plus the families of civilian employees that are put into the total picture, yes, you're probably in that range easily.
Thank you, Mr. McNunn. And I think the reason I bring this up, and as was mentioned, when the Cold War ended and Strategic Air Command came away and Air Combat Command came on board, Ellsworth obviously turned into a whole different type of cat, if you will. The backbone of the Air Force, the KC-135, left the base, leaving me without an airframe. But more importantly, the mission developed into something a lot less than what previously was, that being part of Triad, the Minuteman missiles, along with the B-52s, and, of course, the development of the B-1 came on board. Part of the reason for that question to him was to show you the fluctuation in population. To say that the base has not been on a, or has been on a roller coaster would be an understatement as far as population base. We gained a mission after the last BRAC, for those of you who don't remember, and this legislature did put money in to that fight at that time. The mission that they gained, of course, was Finance Center, which was a concept that I don't know that it's working out as well as they thought it should, but it's still there. As Mr. Langeth briefed during our joint appropriations briefing, I think he talked about the unmanned mission. So there's still some strength out there, along with one of the world's premier bombers, the B-1B. I think it's, even though I know the chair has mentioned to me that we're not going to take action of this on this bill today, I wanted to take this opportunity to make sure that you understood not only the economic impact to the state of South Dakota, and we're not talking West River, but we're talking the whole state, but the fluctuations that Ellsworth has been through, and that this battle can be won with the federal government in proving the worthwhile efforts of our airmen and soldiers out there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Does the committee have any other questions for the folks that have come in to testify? Senator Heineman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe, and I'm not sure, maybe Senator Haverly can answer this too. What's been the history of state dollars with either of these, either the authority or the task force?
Senator,
Mr. Chair, I think there's only been the one-time appropriation of, I think it was $500,000. I don't ever remember, and that was dealing. Mr. McDonough, is that you can come to the mic or not? I don't think we've ever. There might be some money in the Ellsworth Authority that was outside of that, but.
Mr. Chairman, from the Ellsworth Task Force perspective, going back to the early 1990s, the only state money that we requested was in preparation for the 05 round. The governor provided us $150,000 up front, and then the legislature put in the $350,000. So it was a total of five for that particular effort. There was another $500,000 that came from the Black Hills Vision, and also from the city of Rep City and Pennington County, and other private sources in the Rep City area.
Okay. Senator Heineman, did you have a follow-up?
Yeah.
Okay. Are there any other questions from the committee at this point? Okay, seeing none, as I indicated, I'm going to close the public testimony portion of the hearing. And as I indicated at the beginning of the meeting, this morning was the first opportunity we've had as a joint committee to get the updated revenue forecasts. We have a subcommittee that's meeting this afternoon to work through some of that, and the joint committee will plan on adopting revenue estimates tomorrow. So until some of that has happened, I think it would probably be prudent for us to see where those revenue projections are going to fall out, and we'll ultimately take action on this particular bill Monday once we have a better idea where those numbers come in. And I thank the folks for coming in to testify this morning. Okay, moving down on the calendar, as I indicated, 11:36 will be deferred till Monday, as will 11:37. That means that we'll have up next House Bill 1269. This is an act to make an appropriation for certain costs related to disasters and to pine beetle suppression and to declare an emergency. With that, I would take proponent testimony on House Bill 1269.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Christy Terman. I am with the South Dakota Department of Public Safety, Office of Emergency Management. House Bill 1269 replenishes the Emergency and Disaster Special Revenue Fund for costs related to the flooding that occurred in South Dakota in 2011. While 2010 brought an unprecedented number of disaster declarations for South Dakota, the Missouri River flooding in 2011 was one of the largest and most complex disaster response and recovery operations that we've ever dealt with. And this came after a large portion of eastern South Dakota had already been declared a federal disaster area due to spring flooding in March and April. Currently, there are 12 open and active disaster declarations that continue to be administered by the Office of Emergency Management and the Department of Public Safety Finance Section. These 12 disasters total $223 million, over four times the amount of our entire departmental budget. This is a fund that runs a negative balance as costs are incurred. Typically, as the legislative session approaches, we prepare an emergency special appropriation to backfill these costs. This bill appropriates the actual negative balance and the remaining estimated costs that the state will continue to incur, bringing the fund back to zero. And you can see how that is laid out in the handout that I've provided to you. Mr. Chairman, I'll turn testimony over to the Department of Agriculture and Department of Game, Fish, and Parks to talk about their portion of the request, and I'll stand by for questions.
Mr. Chairman, before you do turn that over, on another note, sometimes we don't always have the opportunity to recognize certain jobs and positions in the state, and clearly you occupy one of those spots that is probably underappreciated until things go really wrong. And so, you know, on behalf of myself and I believe the entire committee, thank you for the efforts you put through over this last year. I think you certainly made what could have been an even worse situation much better through your efforts, and I'm sure you had plenty of sleepless nights last June.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and it was a team effort, and I'll pass that on to the rest of my team. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Doug Hofer. I'm the Director of Parks and Recreation for the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks. House Bill 1269, among other things, includes $2 million to help restore some of the park facilities in the state park system that were damaged during the flood that we just had. Now, we talked about that pretty extensively in our appropriations hearing, so I'm just going to refresh some of the important numbers here, and I'll be brief. Overall, we had 42 areas in the state park system, about a third of the state park system as a whole, that saw some kind of damage. About a dozen areas saw extensive damage, but there were 42 areas altogether that did see damage, about 20 state park and recreation areas and 22 lakeside use areas. Overall, our estimate is that the park sustained about $9 million worth of damage due to not only the flooding on the Missouri River, but also flooding in northeast South Dakota. In addition to those areas on the river that flooded, we had parks at Lake Thompson, Lake Ponset, Fisher Grove, and several others that also were damaged due to the flooding. Our game plan going forward is we've started the work to reclaim the parks. All of the parks will be open this spring. Now, being open and having all of the facilities repaired are not necessarily one and the same, but all of the parks will be back open this spring. We're working on restoring turf, removing trees, cleaning up buildings, redoing the electrical systems that were damaged, that due to the water and that sort of thing as we speak. What we've done is we've reprogrammed $1.5 million worth of what would have been improvements in the state park system in the current FY12 budget, and that is the money we're using right now to take care of the highest priority work in the park system. Our budget in the Parks and Recreation Division included $3 million of federal and other funds to go towards this effort, and that's included in the Parks and Recreation Division FY13 budget. This bill would include $2 million additional of general funds, bringing the total dollars available through the end of FY13 to handle the efforts of restoring the parks to about $6.5 million. The remaining $2.5 million obviously would be the lowest priority projects, and those will have to be deferred into FY14 or not done at all, depending on the level of priority and the return on investment. But this will allow us to really get a handle on the most important projects, the things that we need to get back online to make sure that the parks are in good shape this year, and the public, both resident and non-residents, can continue to enjoy the park system. I think one other point, and that is that our FY13 budget included $2 million that we had hoped to get in reimbursement from FEMA. That's not going to happen along the Missouri River. The FEMA has made their call, and based on the fact that the Corps retained a flood easement on that property when the land was transferred to the state, they're not going to be reimbursing us for the eligible, what otherwise would be eligible, facilities on the river. That created a $2 million hole, and obviously that's what this bill is filling, and that's why we're here today. So with that, I'm available for any questions that you may have.
Senator Putnam.
Thank you, and I do. Thank you, Mr. Hofer. When we had the Game Fish and Parks overview, and I'm not recalling this, so remind me, when we talked about these items, and the $2 million was on there then, did we have a priority of those items? Because now we're suggesting, because the dollars aren't all going to come in, that some of them would be put on a different year or fiscal year. Did we talk about the priorities of the dollars that we were going to get?
Only in general terms. Obviously, our first priority is to get the facilities that need to be operational in order to have our campgrounds up and running, electrical systems, comfort stations, turf, get the trees that would pose a danger to our public all removed. And in some cases, there are riprap projects that need to be done to repair shoreline. A good example is out here at Hawaii Downstream below Hawaii Dam. We've got 8 or 10 foot sheer cut banks that have cut back into the park, and unless we repair those, we've got a dangerous situation where we you know, could have kids fall off the banks and create kinds of problems like that. Those are the priorities that we're pursuing right now, and we'll pursue with all of the dollars that make the $6.5 million call it pot. And yes, we do have a list of projects that we'd be deferring beyond FY13 that would be that lower priority in terms of the overall $9 million worth of work.
I guess if I could follow up, Mr. Chairman, I was trying to recall. It sounds like I, just barely remembering some of this, remembered that we were talking about vendors here, too, or vendors, or maybe it was just talking about the buildings that the vendors were in, and that was what was clicking in my head with regard to the priorities, because some money was going to help that portion, and I don't know that it went to the vendor, but certainly the buildings and so forth that we have out there, and that's what I was thinking of.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
You know, I think that probably was a discussion we had in committee about Oahe Downstream. Now, those that's a good example of a vendor that was damaged by the flood. That will not be restored using this money. That's going to come out of his pocket. We're not involved in fixing any facilities that are owned by an outside vendor, which is the case there. But we did talk about the damage that he sustained. These would all be public facilities that we'd be restoring with
these
funds.
That's my question. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Hofer. That's my question. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Hofer.
Thank you.
Are there other proponents?
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Ferris. I'm Deputy Secretary for South Dakota Department of Agriculture. Our portion of this bill of 1269 is the appropriation for mountain pine beetle suppression, and that effort will be used in two ways. $4 million has been allocated to address mountain pine beetle suppression on private forest lands as part of the governor's Black Hills Forest Initiative, and $2,146,645 has been allocated to suppress mountain pine beetles within the boundaries of Custer State Park for a total of $6,146,645. I realize it's been a couple of weeks back that the department we did our briefing to the joint committee, and then also we've done a mountain pine beetle briefing upstairs. So if there are specific questions to help jog somebody's memory, we also have Ray Sowers, our state forester and director of resource conservation and forestry, and their division has been handling most of this mountain pine beetle work. So we'll stand by for questions.
Mr. Ferris, just as a matter of attention to detail, this isn't a huge thing, but in the bill it indicates $6,146,646. You said
I misspoke. It is $6,146,646. The $2,146,646 is part of Custer State Park.
Okay.
My mistake, sir.
We could certainly offer an amendment if you prefer the lower amount.
Well, I'm hoping the dollar doesn't make or break us, sir.
Senator Heineman, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to bring up the topic again, whenever you talk to anyone in the hills about the pine beetle, they continue to say the real issue is the federal lands, and I understand none of this is going to be dealing with that, but can you just again say maybe what are some of the efforts to deal with the federal lands that are ongoing in the hills?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Heineman, I'll speak a little bit to it. May have to bring Ray up to get into the details. We've worked with the United States Forest Service to participate. They have some initiatives that they're engaged in and some monies that they've allocated for work in the Black Hills National Forest. Limited funds on their part have not equaled the amount of work that they have to do, but the state representatives they have in the Black Hills have worked very closely with our department and industry homeowners to try and find every possible solution, but it's not enough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I guess that would be my question. Will the $6 million, if we're not able to really address the federal lands, will the $6 million will they be able to really accomplish what we need to accomplish if the bigger problem are the federal dollars or the federal lands?
You want to answer that? Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask Ray Sowers to come up and help answer that question. I have a thought, but I might be wrong.
Go ahead and express it.
No. I can get myself.
Okay. Mr. Chairman,
you just introduce yourself, even though I know.
Yeah,
you.
Ray Sowers, the State Forester, Department of Agriculture. The $6 million that we're utilizing will be used on non-federal lands. Your question was, is that enough? Quite frankly, we projected those numbers based on what we needed for Custer State Park. On private lands, it was estimated that we would develop a project about twice the size of last year or the previous year's project. The problem in the hills is much larger than that, and we estimated that at the upper end, we could utilize up to $8 million to do work on private lands, non-federal lands. So the $2 million that we're spending in the park will address the issue within Custer State Park, but the $4 million available on private lands is a small portion of what is really needed to address all the problems. But will this help with the major part of the problem being on the federal lands? It probably won't break the back of the epidemic, but it will, I believe, lessen the amount of damage that occurs on the private lands.
Senator Tiedemann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sowers, I know that when we had the presentation, one of the slides that you showed was the epidemic and how that cycle goes up and down. And so coupled with the treatment program and the fire suppression, that hopefully that cycle will start the other way down and that we're going to get a double whammy on the whole issue. My biggest concern is what we're going to be faced with in the fire suppression if the National does not take care of their side, and then we can spend a lot of money addressing and protecting our people and our resources, but we could be impacted by a huge fire that takes off in theirs. But maybe help me in seeing that this investment will help us in protecting those people.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
The investment being made on the private lands, if we didn't do it, we wouldn't have any chance of stopping the epidemic short of the collapse of the epidemic itself, or they ran out of trees to eat. That's not a good solution. So the solution we've chosen to adopt is one of slow-to-spread type philosophy, where we're trying to reduce the amount of damage done and hopefully outlast the epidemic. Does that answer your question?
Follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, it does, Mr. Sowers. I think that's super. My suggestion, too, to help the people from the other side of the state to understand why we're investing this kind of money. Have you explored the possibility of getting that program on public TV? That way we could get the message out to the folks?
Mr. Chairman, we have had one program on public TV dealing with the mountain pine beetle issues, and I was part of that panel discussion. We could certainly have more, yes.
Senator Heineman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Has there been any estimate in terms of what it would cost to really deal with the pine beetle on the federal lands?
Go ahead.
You're talking an estimated 400,000 acres this year of areas impacted by mountain pine beetle. The epidemic is growing at a rate of about, for every infested tree this year, you'll have three next year. So you can see that the problem is compounding annually. It's not a straight line increase. It's an exponential increase in damage. The longer we waited, or the longer the Forest Service waits to dedicate significant funding to addressing the issue, the worse it's going to get. At this point, we hope we can stay ahead of it, and hopefully the epidemic will collapse before we lose all our trees or a major share of our trees.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Appropriations Committee. I'm so used to saying transportation.
Out of order.
I'm not used to coming here. I'm Mylon Rao with the South Dakota Trucking Association. I remember coming here in what I so fondly call my past life, and I still remember the beatings. So if I'm a little nervous, that'd be the reason. I'm really here also to talk just about Section 3 of the bill, and you might wonder why the Trucking Association cares. Well, In my past life or past occupation with the Highway Patrol and in this occupation, I've encouraged the Black Hills Log Haulers Association to become members of the South Dakota Trucking Association. Excuse me. We finally accomplished that last year, about April. And as a result of that, for me to represent them, I'm a hands-on kind of guy, and I needed to understand what they did. So I voluntarily rode with these guys for a week in the Black Hills. And what I saw in that week, not only in what they do, but in the mountain pine beetle infestation we have, was unbelievable to me. And I feel I do have a small understanding of what's going on out there. And I appreciate the questions from Senator Heineman. This is a goes beyond tourism and other things. We're ruining a logging industry by not taking grasp of this. And yes, it is a federal problem and a state problem, but we rise in support because this is a start. This is at least a step, and perhaps if we take this step, the feds will also assist. Today, when we cut trees, we don't cut the trees that you see if you go out there and see the red trees. Those trees are worthless to us. What's being cut is the trees with the beetle in the tree at the time. And there's a blue stain that ends up from what they do to the tree. There's a stain that goes into the wood, which has significantly lowered the price of that lumber. Now, when you go to a mill and look at it, and as they saw it, it's actually pretty to some people. But to some, it's not. So it's really lowered that. So not only are we affecting tourism, what we're so used to when we visit that part of the state, we're also affecting an industry. We have three mills, one at Hewlett, Wyoming, one at Spearfish, and one at Hill City that are going to be impacted if this industry fails or doesn't have trees to harvest anymore, along with about 30 or 40 trucking companies that's all they do. So again, we rise in support of Section 3 of this bill. Thank you.
Any other proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Angela Ehlers, and I represent South Dakota's conservation districts. The conservation districts in Lawrence, Pennington, and Custer County have been working on the mountain pine beetle project in cooperation with the South Dakota Department of Agriculture and the South Dakota Department of Game, Fish, and Parks. The three conservation districts signed a joint powers agreement this fall with the state and those two agencies, and we provide the staff that goes out and does the mountain pine beetle marking under the direction of the two agencies. At one point, we had over 40 people working as mountain pine beetle markers. And the association, we provide the management services. So I've been very busy supervising people from remote, but it has made a tremendous difference. My crew members and both the agencies have told me that the local people are very happy to have that service. We do the marking, and then there's cost share available, I believe, to help them with removal of the trees. We are finishing the marking season because the bugs are probably going to start flying soon. We're still working in Custer State Park, but we have finished on the private lands. We're doing this for 3 years, hopefully, if you propose the money. But it's just it shows you that the local governments are working with your state agencies, and we are making a difference. Thank you.
Any other proponents to House Bill 1269? Proponents. Are there any opponents to 1269? Opponents? Okay, we'll end the public testimony on House Bill 1269, and I'll open it up for committee action, discussion, and or questions. Senator Tiedemann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move due pass on House Bill 1269.
Second.
It's been moved due pass by Senator Tiedemann, seconded by Senator Haverly. Is there any further discussion on that motion?
I just feel, Mr. Chairman, that, one, it's taking and covering a bill that we owe in the flood situation, helping provide game, fish, and parks, some of the public facilities to be restored, and then also I think the investment in the taking care of the mountain pine beetle, I think that helps our industry in the hills as well as taking and protecting the tourism as well as the logging industry, and urge support of passage of 1269.
Senator Putnam.
Thank you. And I would also comment, not necessarily things in the bill, but the idea that Senator Tiedemann had in suggesting that, you know, our public TV or whatever, they have an opportunity to go out there and maybe do a little series on this. And I hope whoever carries it on the floor will make that, probably be able to say something like that, because the eastern part probably don't have a handle on it like they do out there until they realize that tourism is our draw. And if those trees are gone, I would imagine there'd be a change of the name on the Black Hills. So, but it's very important. Thank you.
Senator Heineman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to echo your comments as well, I do believe this is an issue that we really have to stay focused on, even though session is ending. The pine beetle obviously isn't, and I think it's a really critical issue for us to continue to put pressure on the federal government. And it sounds like there are, in some counties, they're actually creating a relationship with the federal government that they're able to go in and start clearing that. So I think anything we can do and to continue to focus on this issue throughout the year is going to be critical. So I would, again, support the DUPAS.
Any other discussion? Okay, the motion before you is Tiedemann's motion to do pass. All those in favor will say aye. Those opposed will say no. Secretary will call the roll.
Sutton.
Aye.
Peters.
Aye.
Nordstrom.
Aye.
Heineman.
Aye.
Haberle.
Aye.
Junkie.
Aye.
Putnam.
Aye.
Tiedemann.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
9-0.
1269, I'll move to the Senate floor with the do pass recommendation. Senator Putnam, in order to make sure that that statement does get made on the floor, would you be willing to carry 1269? Thank you. All right. Up next is House Bill 1270. This is an act to revise the time period for which unclaimed property is presumed abandoned and to revise certain provisions regarding the publication notice of unclaimed property. Proponents for House Bill 1270.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Jason Dilges, Bureau of Finance and Management. This particular piece of legislation was born out of some meetings that the governor and I had several months ago with a large bank in South Dakota. We were discussing with that bank things that South Dakota could do and opportunities that we might be able to take advantage of in order to recruit more banking charters to South Dakota. This particular bank had recently moved its home offices to South Dakota, and we wanted to try and build on some of those strengths. And so we met with them and visited about some things that we could do, and I think you'll see as we move along that There's some instances where South Dakota can do some things to be more attractive to some of these banks. Nevertheless, this bank is in South Dakota and is happy with its choice to relocate its home offices here. And during those conversations, suggested to us that we may consider a small change in statute that might net the state a little bit more revenue and maybe bring us closer to some of our surrounding states as it relates to unclaimed property. The bill itself is pretty simple. It seeks to change the time period for which unclaimed property is considered dormant and abandoned. And as you're probably aware, once property is declared abandoned, it is turned over to the Office of the State Treasurer, who becomes the custodian of those funds and is responsible to try to find its rightful owner, and if they're successful, to remit those dollars back to the rightful owner. In the event that they are not successful in finding the rightful owner, those dollars then are transferred to the State General Fund. Although I should mention that that is a perpetual liability of the state of South Dakota. If ever we're able to find rightful owners to the unclaimed property, the general fund is responsible to essentially write the check to those particular individuals. We collect somewhere in the realm of $10 to $12 million annually as a result of this, and that number has jumped in the last several years because of an acquisition made by one of South Dakota's banks of another large national bank, and so our unclaimed property remittances have gone up. The issue at hand here is that the bank that we were conversing with before they moved their corporate offices to South Dakota faced a situation whereby the state legislature on the 11th hour of their session recognized that this bank was going to change its corporate location to South Dakota and change their dormancy laws from 3 years to 2 years so that they could pick up an extra year kind of as a farewell gift to this particular bank, and we're successful in doing that. And in engaging in conversation with them, they suggested that we probably shouldn't go to a two-year dormancy, but rather change our five-year dormancy to a three-year dormancy. And so we've done that in House Bill 1270. What it does is changes for a number of items the dormancy period from 5 years to 3 years. And I've got a cheat sheet that I would go through with you. Savings accounts, checking accounts, money orders, cashier checks, certified checks, safety deposit boxes, life insurance, casualty insurance, dividends, stocks, shares, fiduciaries, IRAs, things of that nature would all be changed under this bill from 5 years to 3 years. The result of that would be that once the law goes into effect, the next June 30th, any property that would be declared 3 years and older as abandoned would be turned over to the state treasurer the following fiscal year. I recall from this morning's revenue estimates there was a conversation that took place with regard to this particular legislation and what it might do to our revenue estimates. The way that I read this bill as well as the statutes that govern this would result in this bill going into effect July 1st, and then the subsequent June 30th, any property that would be 3 years, 4 years, or 5 years old would be declared unclaimed and abandoned, and then the statutes say that the following November 1st is the deadline for the filing of the reports. And so that would result in revenue to the state in 2014 as opposed to 2013. So this is a kind of a looking forward piece of legislation. We have visited with the bank that was involved in this, and it was their idea. So I wanted to make sure it was clear that they were not in opposition to the legislation, and they assured me that they are not. We also met with the Bankers Association, and they expressed no significant heartburn, I guess is the way I would state it, to this proposed change. I think it's fair to say that in many instances, the longer property is abandoned, the more difficult it is to return to its rightful owner, the more time that lapses. And so it becomes, I think, a paper nightmare for a lot of these banks to continue to hold on to this unclaimed property. And so by moving that time period from 5 to 3 years, I think what you'll see is a greater emphasis on trying to return that property to its rightful owner sooner. And then once it is transmitted to the state, obviously we have a renewed emphasis and desire to get that property back to its rightful owner. So there might be some ancillary benefit of doing this that might get the citizens of South Dakota more money back. And certainly that's no not intended to be any kind of an insult on the job that the banking world does on returning unclaimed property, because I think they do a fabulous job. But we could centralize it, I think, and try to really, as part of our mission, make sure that property is returned. And obviously, in the midst of that, there'll be a windfall to the state of South Dakota as well, because a good share of that property is likely unable to ever be refunded back to its rightful owner. So There was also a piece of added on to this bill to talk about notifications and advertisements that we worked with the state treasurer's office on. I view that as friendly. There was a small amendment put on over on the House side
And so I would just like to point that out at the end of the bill, that there's some language on that as well. So hoping that you could support this. There hasn't been any opposition to this bill thus far. And I think that this brings us in line with some of our surrounding states, if I could, Mr. Chairman. Some other states' dormancy laws. Nevada is 2 years, North Dakota 3 years, Minnesota 3 years, Iowa's 3 years, Nebraska's five, Wyoming's five, and Montana's five. So that kind of gives you some perspective. It's five and three seem to be the commonplace for dormancy laws. So with that, I hope that you could appreciate this bill, and I'll answer any questions.
Does the question, or does the committee have any questions? Senator Heineman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said that, so even after the three-year period, if someone does come forward, the state still has a liability at that point?
If, Mr. Chairman, Senator Heineman, if you had closed down a checking account 20 years ago and there were dollars there, and for some reason or another they couldn't find you, and you popped up 20 years later and made good on that claim, the state of South Dakota owes you your money. And that liability of the state that we have agreed to exists forever, as I understand it.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How often does that happen? Even with the 5 years, have you had many that have come back?
You know, that's a great question, and I think I do have a friend behind me who might be able to offer a little more insight in some of the aged unclaimed property and what our success rate is in returning that to its rightful owner.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Lee Desjardins. I'm the Unclaimed Property Administrator with the State Treasurer's Office. And good question, Senator Heineman. We are currently right now in our advertising season where we are advertising the properties we received as of November 1st. We're advertising approximately 9,000 properties at this time. And those properties are generally 5 to 6 years old at this point. We're receiving hundreds of calls, as you can imagine. And so, yes, we have properties that come up years and years later. This debt also passes on to the heir. So anybody who is an heir to the original owner and can provide the documentation, usually the personal representative, can claim it on the behalf of the estate. So it does perpetuate. We have many, many grandchildren claiming grandma and grandpa's monies.
Senator Putnam.
Also in the bill, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Also in the bill, I see you've bumped up the administrator, the number that they have to now... live within. In other words, it used to be $50 or something, and you've bumped that number up just as a matter of what? I mean, just as a matter of efficiency, or is it just the values of things have moved, or why would we be just bumping that number?
Mr. Chair, I can speak to the rest of the bill where we've changed the advertising and the dollar limit. The dollar limit has been increased, proposed to be increased to $125 rather than $50 due to the expected growth of the number of names. Like I said, currently we're averaging about 9,000 names, and as you can see in the next few years, the change in the property reporting law could increase those names exponentially. You know, we have no way to estimate that, so we're trying to work a way around the workload increase with staff rather than increasing staff. The $125 amount was kind of agreed upon between us and the advertising, the newspaper advertising mandate that we have. All dollar amounts, we have the capability to show all property on our website. And so anybody who would choose to search our web would find their under $125 amount there, or they can call our office. Now, also, in a, I was going to give testimony, but I'll just kind of abbreviate it for you. What we've got is, as a result of this 5 year to 3 year, like I said, we are looking at reducing some of the workload so that we can maintain the same staff level. Right now, we require, you know, abandoned property over $50 to be reported in the newspapers the last 2 weeks of March statewide. That results in us having several hundred calls a day. We get about 60 emails, 5 to 10 communications in the mail daily, and our website is also producing close to 200 claims a day also due to the advertising. What we do is we list all of the property owners who are named and the dollar amounts in the prior address in the paper. We run that ad 2 consecutive weeks. What we are looking to do is to reduce that ad to $125 and over, and then also run it once in the spring in the first quarter, and then again after our life insurance reporting deadline, which is May 1st, we would run a new ad with those names after that in the next quarter so that we have time to process. This should lighten some of the advertising load, splitting it into 2 times, and then also reducing it to 1 time, 1 week during each period. We do receive several repeat calls. People see their names in the paper twice and call and want to know if there's something else out there. So it would help with that also. So, and also we have our website, which I said is capable of showing all at properties that we own.
Senator Nordstrom.
Well, I'm just going to be frustrated for a minute. Whenever I've seen the list in the past, I see things like the mayor of Aberdeen, and no one's able to find them. I just punched in Super 8, and there are 6 listings for Super 8, 4 which might be hard to find because they're Super 8 franchisees, but 2 of them are Super 8, period. And we're unable to find Super 8 in Aberdeen?
Mr. Chairman, under the current policies that are in place, and I've also visited with the Attorney General's office over the policies, we are pretty much forbidden from cold calling. We can submit letters, but we cannot just send you a claim form to Super 8 saying, here are your properties, sign this. It's supposed to be initiated by the claimant. And so that's the current policies, and we are reviewing those policies. And so there may be changes coming up. I know that several states have initiated a plan of using Accurint for most current best address, and are sending letters rather than doing the newspaper advertising to the owners to see if that would generate some follow-up. We do review those records periodically, and we do contact state agencies and public entities right now. We do have letters that go out to them telling them that they potentially have property and to contact us.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just typed in a gentleman's name by the name of Rounds from Pier. There are 3 hits.
There are a lot of Rounds in Pier. Senator Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you don't have this number, I understand, but do we have an idea of the total liabilities that the state would have to come up with? Just for instance, if I know it's not feasible, but if everybody came forward, what would our liability be?
I don't have an exact figure, and we can certainly try and find that for you, but it's in the tens of millions of dollars, because you're going back to statehood, probably. And as you recall, if the state's receiving 10 to 12 million annually, that's not being returned back to its rightful owners, it can grow to be significant. The dollars for which we're talking about under House Bill 1270, and more specifically the large bank that's moved its headquarters to South Dakota, probably 80% of all of that unclaimed property that they would transmit will be unidentifiable. And the reason for that is, one, there would be either no address on the property, or the address would be located out of the United States of America, or 3, this bank executes very large bank trades for capital, and for one reason or another, those trades are all rounded, and so when you round those transactions, you get an amount of rounding error, and that becomes all unclaimed property. And so as a result, we would envision that a significant portion of this will be unidentifiable to any owner.
Senator Nordstrom?
Well, instead of just being a complainer this morning, I've got a practical suggestion. What I would suggest the office does is come back with a law next year that says anything under $10 can be abolished, and then we focus on putting more energy on the where the money is, kind of the 80-20 rule. So, just a suggestion is to abolish the small ones with state law, and then focus on giving back the larger numbers.
Senator Peters.
Thank you. I guess we started talking about policy and procedure. I just want to be clear on exactly what we're talking about. Is this an internal policy or procedure with the office, or are we talking about laws, or are we talking about rules or constitution?
Mr. Chair, right now it's an internal policy in the office from the prior administration. We've not totally gone through all of the policies. I have reviewed that particular one with the Attorney General's, our contact there, and due to a small issue that was had over an initiated claim by the unclaimed property in the prior administration that kind of came back to us and caused quite a problem. And so right now we're going with the advice of the Attorney General's office to not initiate a cold call claim. We are only going to be taking the claims that people are initiating to us, or if we do happen to have the time to go through them, like I said, we do with the public schools, the state agencies, we send them a communication stating that you potentially have unclaimed property out there.
Do you have a follow-up, Senator Peters? Senator Peters, did you have a follow-up?
Maybe. I can't get on your website. Everybody else can, but I can't. So I don't have a follow-up. I don't know if it's an Apple thing or if it's a PC thing. No, I know what it looks like. I was just statement of comment that I can't get it. They blocked my access.
They heard you all querying their database and they shut it down.
Senator Putnam.
Just a comment. I came to South Dakota in 1976 and quickly learned that there was a cottage industry here. And because I had come from an investigator's background, I formed a small business, and we then learned that there wasn't public information here. And we would go to the Secretary of State's office and local offices and copy all of these names and so forth down. And then we would mail letters to these individuals whose name was on there and said, we have found some money for you, and for 10%, we'll tell you where it's at. I know you're laughing, but nevertheless, it was a good cottage business, and we did notify. When later years came on and there was an increase in knowledge about why the state was withholding this information, that all changed. And then we became extremely public about this, and so that cottage industry kind of drifted away a little bit, if you will. But I have a great history with it, and I'm glad that it's doing what it is now, and I think that your cost efficiency matter with regard to the ads is going to pay off in the long run anyway. So, but thank you. But you did ruin the cottage industry by doing some of this stuff.
Any other questions? And just so the record correctly reflects, I know we kind of went about a little bit weird, but I assume you were going to testify as a proponent, Ms. Desjardins.
Mr. Chair, yes. And if I may, Senator Peters, I have to have an iPad, and there are many state websites that are very difficult to use. However, I have been able to get on our site typically in the evenings. Oh, I'll have to have our web designer look at that. Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? Are there other proponents to House Bill 1270? Proponents. Are there any opponents to House Bill 1270? Opponents. Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing portion of the bill on 1270, and I'll open it up for committee action and or discussion. Senator Tiedemann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move to pass on House Bill 1270.
It's It's been moved by Senator Tiedemann, do pass, seconded by Senator Putnam. Is there any further discussion?
Well, I recognize some of the suggestions that were given by Senator Northrup, and I'm hoping that the commission will look at that. But I think that moving from 5 to 3 will also aid South Dakota in capturing some value. So I'd urge support of House Bill 1270.
Any other comments from the committee? Okay, seeing none, the motion before you is Tiedemann's do pass motion on House Bill 1270. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed will say no. The secretary will call the roll.
Sutton.
Aye.
Peters.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Heineman.
Aye.
Haverly.
Aye.
Junkie.
Aye.
Putnam.
Aye.
Tiedemann.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
9-0.
1270 will move to the Senate floor with a do pass recommendation. I'll lean on our banker friend, Senator Sutton. Would you be willing to carry that bill on the floor? Thank you. All right. As I indicated at the beginning of the meeting, I'm going to leave the last two bills below the line. We'll address those on Monday. For the committee, we'll get an agenda posted here to take care of the remainder of these bills, but I would anticipate a 9 o'clock start time Monday morning to wrap up our business, and unless something else happens between now and then, that should be the last meeting of the Senate Appropriations Committee for the year. I can see tears coming from my secretary. I think we've got the minutes are all up to date. Senator Junkie volunteered to take the minutes for today when those are done. I appreciate that. Okay. With that, I don't have any further business. I'd look for a motion to adjourn. It's been moved by Senator Haverly, seconded by Senator Peters. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We're adjourned.